Hey listeners, and hey Phil.
Hey Laurie.
Phil, it's been a while since we've spoken, hasn't it?
It's felt very long indeed.
Precisely 10 days that I've been away and you've been here all on your own with no one to talk to, not a friend in the world.
Disagree. I've had loads of people to talk to. I've been talking to more people than I ever talked to in these last 10 days.
Good to put a brave face on these things.
I miss the socialite.
Keep soldiering on, little soldier.
I have found more friends in those last 10 days than I have in my entire life.
Sad, isn't it, listeners? But there we go. Welcome to episode 35, 36 of the Super Betty Bros and Movie Land podcast. I think it is 36 because
I thought we were on 34 last week.
No, last week was episode 35, the special one, which had no movie reviews, but it had the Picture Perfect, it had what we've been watching, you know, the sort of simulated episode.
Right, man. I don't think we gave it a number, did we?
Yes, we gave it number 35, hence this is episode 36, that's right. But the point is, welcome. We've got some great movie reviews coming up and other bits and bobs too. Phil, do you want to tell us the movies we're doing this week?
Yep, so we've got Finding Dory, the sequel to Finding Nemo.
Much awaited. Long awaited. What's the phrase? You keep moving. Keep going.
And then we've also got Jason Bourne. I've gone to see that. Laurie hasn't managed to see that because he's been busy on holiday.
I saw three films today, man. I've been working hard to keep up.
You've done well to keep up, but you haven't caught up with Jason Bourne.
Oh.
Because he's running away from you.
Who can? Come on. He's too athletic, too good for me.
Yeah. And then we're going to be asking the question, what makes good acting?
Yeah, well, yes, and it's important for us to say, listeners, me and Phil are going to both speculate, because, you know, if you're a punter watching a film, you've got an opinion about whether you think they did a good job or a bad job. You don't necessarily have to be an expert to have an opinion. I'm just putting that out there.
So qualifies everywhere.
Yeah, we're going to give you our criteria that we judge performances by, and you may or may not be interested in that. There it is. And a few emails and tweets.
Emails and tweets, and I think some movie news or something like that.
Well, yeah, wait and see what we've got for that little section there. Listeners, it might be a slightly different movie news this week. And you know what? One of the things I learned on this last week, Phil, you know, in a mysterious kind of way, is how to do an old man voice, a sort of comedy old man voice. Would you like to hear it?
Okay.
Here it is. Ask me something, young man. Come on, sir.
What do you want me to ask you?
Anything at all.
What's your name, old man?
My name, well, in this case, it was Captain Cook. I was being an old Captain Cook.
Captain Cork or Captain Cook?
Captain Cook, don't be so embittered, sir. Are you enjoying this?
Yeah, it's great.
Well, on that bombshell, listeners, listen out for more old man in the podcast. Crack it on.
Dear, what would the old man say to get us going?
We're so out of practice. Well, first the old man would say, thank you so much, Odeon, Magdalen Street and George Street, for your support of the podcast. It means a great deal. And listeners, make sure you visit there and say the Super Betty Blows sent you.
And an old man, apparently.
Yes. Okay, let's get going. Pip, pip.
Tally-ho.
Off we go.
Just keep watching our franchise until you get all the money out of you.
That's overly cynical, Phil, because I don't think that is going to be the tone of this review for Finding Dory, is it?
Well, you said make up a joke, Phil. I did.
Well done, and we're all rolling in the aisles. Congrats. Okay, listeners, we went to see Finding Dory, Pixar/Disney's latest take on the epic sea adventure, initially starring Nemo and his dad, what was he called, Marlin?
Marlin, yep.
Well, and Dory, of course, who now takes centre stage.
She is the main character. It's all about finding her real life, her past life, before she got all the memory loss stuff going on.
Do you know when Finding Nemo was released, Phil?
I'm going to say 2004.
That's a pretty good guess. Go 1 year back.
2003.
Correct. Which makes it 13 years ago that Finding Nemo hit the cinema. Yeah. That's a big deal. So kids watching it then, you know, teenagers by now.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Older than, of course, yeah. I mean, yeah, sorry, I'm doing the math in my head very slowly. So, you know, it's an old franchise. Why did they wait so long, do you think?
Pixar at that stage, they were probably trying to actually do what they were doing, what they were famous for, original stories. And it seems to be recently they've lost confidence in their original ideas and instead going back to the classics and extending them somehow. And this seems to be not too much of a stretch, a natural extension to the Nemo world.
Well, let's find out what we thought, shall we? Should we play a little clip before we do any reviewing?
Yes, but first, let's talk about the plot a bit first.
Do you want to hit me with it, or do you want me to hit you with it?
I think you should hit us with the plot.
This film takes place exactly 1 year afterwards, as the floating titles tell us, and Dory is kind of living alongside Marlin and Nemo in their little sea anemone, in their nice little sort of tiny village world. That's kind of what it is, isn't it?
There's the coral reef, isn't it?
Yeah, the coral reef, a school, very safe. But Dory begins to have flashbacks about her parents, because obviously Dory came from somewhere, but as we all know, she's very forgetful and she seems to have forgotten where she came from. She sees a current, I think it is, and that somehow starts a chain reaction, and she starts remembering all these little tiny snapshots of her previous home life, where she came from, and she's consumed with a desire to remember as much as she can and discover her parents again. And of course, Marlon and Nemo, more or less unthinkingly, decide to join her on that journey. So let's do a clip here, and this is from the trailer, actually. I had a look at some of the clips that are available to us and the copyrighty thing that...
Legal.
Yeah. And actually, I don't think any of them do as good a job of expressing the tone of the film as the first little bit of the trailer. So should we play that instead?
Yeah, let's do that.
Here we go.
Fantastic.
Hello! Did you hear that?
What was that? Hear what?
Stan, I heard someone say hello.
Yeah, there's a lot of fish here. Anybody, literally anybody could have just said hello.
Hello? There.
Where am I looking?
There.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Dory.
Yeah, well, where are your parents?
Hi, I've lost my family.
Where did you see them last?
I forgot. I was looking for something and I... Okay, totally get it. Date night. I suffer from short-term memory loss. It runs in my family. At least I think it does. Where are they?
Dory, there you
Guys!
Are! Look out!
Ah!
Oh, look at this.
Our friend got taken into whatever this place is.
It's a fish hospital.
I feel fantastic!
Listen!
Dude.
Name's Hank.
I have to find my family.
That's a hard one, kid.
Well, I guess you're stuck here.
You're not helping, Bill.
So yeah, there you go. We're back with Dory. She's as, you know, delightful as ever. Marlon's as grumpy as ever. Nemo is as spirited and hopeful as ever. And she's ended up in a fish hospital.
Fish hospital, kind of a sanctuary run by Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed that little joke. Is that the actual case? Because I assume it's a real place.
I'm assuming so. I don't know, but I enjoyed the fact that she was name-checked often.
She's the sort of god voice of the aquarium announcing everything, isn't she?
Yeah, I like that. That was a good little bit of fun.
So, man, what did you think of the movie? Hit us with something.
Yeah, I'd say it's overall quite an enjoyable film, but there are some problems, I would say. It was really nice to revisit the world of Nemo, Finding Nemo. It's the same sort of characters, it's the same sort of beautiful scenery. You've got lovely oceans to explore and plenty of characters, which is really nice. And Pixar's do characters really well, I think.
They can do, certainly.
And the ocean's full of all these odd little animals that you can give unique quirks to. And I think that's kind of what this film's delivering, more time in that world with Dory, with Marlon and Nemo.
I'd agree, although there are some crucial differences. I mean, the film absolutely hangs on Dory's short-term memory loss, doesn't it? That is the central driver for literally everything that happens. And, you know, forgive me for an obvious and yet completely unobvious comparison, but Memento dealt with short-term memory loss in a very different way.
Man, the Finding Nemo version of Memento. Ooh.
Wouldn't that be something? But, you know, I would say far more inventive. Not that it's particularly negative here, it's just they don't push it far. They just use it as a way to make a story happen.
It's interesting that this seems to be the way that they've got into the sequel, because I think they did exactly the same thing with Cars 2, the sequel to the first Cars, is they took the buddy character, the kind of comedy sidekick character, and then that he becomes the focus in that film, and now she becomes the focus of that film. Whereas I think Finding Nemo is much more about fatherhood and overcoming sort of your vulnerabilities and your weaknesses and that not holding you back. Whereas this film doesn't, if somebody said, what's this film about? I wouldn't really know what it's about. I'd say it's about Dory. That's about it.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I would say that a key thing missing in this movie, partly because of this and partly because I guess they just didn't want to risk trying to remake Finding Nemo, you know, and run the risk of it being really inferior, is that they completely swap the scope and the style of story. So this is a very small scale adventure, really. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a one location sort of film.
Exactly. And that kind of that is part of the joke, in fact, that it's all small and there are mistakes. Whereas one thing that was present in Finding Nemo, because it was a tiny fish's journey all the way across the vast ocean, was he had lots of danger and darkness and mystery and unknowns, whereas not so much in this one.
The film is hitting all the right points and all the right beats for me, and I enjoyed so much of it. I did enjoy, but it didn't feel particularly original, I would say.
Any notes on the cast and characters?
There's quite a lot of new characters and new creatures that are voiced by various different celebrities. You've got Idris Elba makes another voice acting appearance.
That guy is never off your screens for more than 10 minutes. I mean, he's on TV, he's in every Disney film. That golden handshake deal, or whatever we said, with him being present on all the Sky adverts and then every animated Disney movie is in full force.
Yeah, he's playing the voice of a sea lion. I think Phil Dunphy's character, I can't remember the name of him, but he's an echolocating dolphin or something. Bailey, that's what I forgot.
Come on, man, how could you forget?
You always forget people who've got
character.
The same name as you. Yeah, but Bailey, he was great. He was very funny. Actually really did think the sea lions were quite funny as well, and I enjoyed that.
They were the seagulls, weren't they? But with a bit more personality.
Yeah.
And the original cast, you know, turn in a fine performance, don't they? I thought slightly worryingly, they don't appear to have changed at all in that year. I don't really know what happens to fish as they get older, but I would have expected Nemo to get a little larger.
Well, interestingly, Nemo isn't voiced by the same little boy because, as you say, it's been 13 years.
Yeah.
They've got a new little boy to voice.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it would work as well. The dynamic is that it's father and son.
Yeah.
And I don't think fish hang around as like father and son.
Teenage
duos.
Nemo would have been quite fun. They could have made loads of jokes out of that. Dad, I'm not coming.
He's got like a piercing in his fin or something like that.
Yeah, wouldn't that have been so cool? Oh, that would. Why didn't they do that? Maybe that's the next
Emo,
sequel.
Emo Nemo.
Emo Nemo, come on,
finding
that.
Emo.
Yeah, well, man, I share all your thoughts here. I thought it was enjoyable. I mean, I loved Finding Nemo, and I enjoyed Finding Dory. I think, you know, what I mentioned before, the pitfalls and the real depths of darkness that Finding Nemo took us to were equally balanced by the highs and the drama. And I think this film was squashed at both ends, so it's just a middle lane movie. But perfectly enjoyable for all that.
What things do you think really they did nail well? Because I do think it's a well-made film. Do you not agree?
I think they captured the characters again nicely. And they introduced, like, Hank the Octopus is a slightly odd character. He's a random mix of things, but he's fun, isn't he? And they were quite creative with the camouflage-y stuff that octopuses have. I didn't know they were that advanced at it. And there were just nice little narrative creative moments where they could have taken a more easy option, but they chose an unusual one. I did think there were some problems with that. I mean, you remarked on The Secret Life of Pets, the climax of that movie slightly broke the suspension of disbelief well beyond what's achievable in an animated movie, which is, by its very nature, quite flexible anyway. Mm. I think this movie nearly did that too, would you agree?
I think possibly even further.
Yeah, exactly. So that I found a bit odd, but yeah, it was perfectly fine.
Interesting you mentioned the climax. I think the film goes on too long. It draws it out. I think there's a very clear point where I thought it was going to end.
Right.
And then they tack on a whole nother sequence, which I just thought, I don't really want this anymore. In fact, I heard a very young little girl a couple rows back behind me say, "Is it not the end of the movie?"
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was, I think she was getting a little bit uncomfortable in her seat.
Interesting you say that, because the kid in my cinema, I saw this one at 9 in the morning, so it was a really early showing. And the kids, there was one family in the cinema apart from me, and the two youngest kids, right from minute one, were saying, "It's too noisy, I don't like it." And they left within about 10 minutes.
Oh, gosh, that's
mum,
a rough day, isn't it?
I know, yeah. The mum stayed there with one other kid, so I think there must have been a willing partner out there to chaperone the kids for the morning. But yeah, I don't know. For that reason, I don't really know how the younger audience is taking it. But yeah, perfectly enjoyable movie. Definitely worth a watch. Doesn't reach the same heights, but it's certainly not a disappointment. Do you want to give a grade?
I think probably I would give it a B.
A B? Yeah, I think I'd share that, man. I'd be tempted to say B minus, but I won't. Of course I won't. I'm going to say B. You ready for my little bonus bits?
Yeah.
I just want a quick note on Piper, which is the little short that Pixar will not ditch from their productions. This is about a little baby bird learning how to survive on a coast, isn't it?
Yeah, a little kind of like seagully type thing.
And, you know, only a one-line thing from me. I think it showed a shocking lack, actually, of imagination. It was fine. It was just fine. It was just very, very average. And I think you thought this was a marker of the way that Pixar are going.
Yeah, like there was, I think they have this sort of sense that the beauty of storytelling is when you don't say any words or don't have complex stories.
And have a really basic idea that's slightly cutesily done. It was a bit mawkish, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought the animation was amazing, but...
But then, you know, I won't go into this because I'll bore everybody. You know, there aren't any CGI models on display in any art galleries. I'm just going to put it like that.
Simon's going to be knocking again, isn't he?
Okay, and then I thought those incredibly photogenic sunfish at one point. Do you know what a sunfish is?
No, what's a sunfish?
So did you notice in Finding... And this is in the trailer as well, if you've seen the trailer. There's a fish that looks like it's on its side perpetually and it's big. Do you know, can you picture the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She talks to it and it's got a nice cute face and it smiles at him. In real life, those sunfish are not cute. Look them up. Like, they've really done a Photoshop job. I'm surprised there's more outrage from the sunfish community. A final one, thumbs up or thumbs down for the end credits? I just gave you two options there, Phil.
Thumbs down. I didn't think it was that... I stayed right to the very end. There is a little extra thing right at the very end. I didn't think it was really worth it.
Thumbs down, really?
Well, if anything, it kind of made me a bit sad about something in the last movie.
How about that, listeners? Mysterious. Tell us what you think. Thanks so much. Get in touch, superbabybros@gmail.com or Twitter at superbabybros. Pam, get in here. That's Jason Bourne. I need eyes on it right now. Come on, people. He is armed. He is dangerous. Oh, he's gone there. He's gone into that tiny little yellow mini. Don't let him get away in the mini. Trace the mini. That's Jason a good scene. Come on, that is a good scene. Was that in the film, Phil? I haven't seen this one.
So I've gone to see this film, and it is, it's like that every single time. I was thinking you could do like a supercut of people just saying, it's Jason Bourne.
Jason
back.
Bourne.
What's he doing back? Jason Bourne. That's Jason Bourne. Yeah, just people saying who he is. Like,
I thought it was even going on in the last film, which he wasn't even in.
Supercut, man. It will appear at some point, I'm sure.
Okay, man, well, do you want to tell us what this film is about, other than the obvious?
So, Jason Bourne is about Jason Bourne, and...
I said other than the obvious. Keep moving.
That's all I can do, man. It follows Matt Damon's character. He has been in hiding since the last film, kind of ignoring the Bourne legacy, the Jeremy Renner film that you talked about and what we've been watching a couple weeks ago. And it seems to be that even though all of the things that he's been doing in the previous films to try and take down the CIA organizations... they're still kind of running. There's still some shady stuff going on at the CIA. And a person from his past seems to have drawn him out.
Ooh,
and
imagine.
Said, you must go and deal with this. You need to know the real story.
Phil, I heard Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon in an interview the other day. You know, shamelessly, I heard it on another podcast, movie podcast, but I think it's okay. Reported speech, isn't it?
We're all friends,
I hope. And they said the only way that they could make this work, Paul Greengrass, I think, said it to Matt Damon, to do a sequel after the third one was to make it seem like literally 10 minutes after the end of that final movie, stuff started going wrong. So if you came in and Jason Bourne was in pretty good shape, it would feel contrived to then generate a new conflict. Is that true? Do they do that?
I don't know what they're talking about. That doesn't really follow suit at all.
Like, I didn't finish the interview, so that's quite out of context. They did say that, though.
Yeah, I believe them, and that's the sort of rubbish that they say on press junkets, isn't it?
Right.
But no, Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon, it's important to talk about them up front. But maybe before we do that, Laurie, we should talk about... maybe we should play a clip.
Well, yeah, okay. All right, let's do that. What's going on in this clip?
Okay, Jason Bourne is in Athens in this clip. He is in the middle of a riot, it seems, a street riot sort of thing, a political rally.
That boy is always in trouble, Phil.
Always in trouble. And this is the place he's meeting his contact, this mysterious figure from his past. And also you've got the CIA involved, watching remotely and trying to catch him and their contact.
Sounds tense. Let's hear it.
A suspect matching Bourne's description has stolen a police motorcycle. Parsons is at the Statue of Athena.
Copy that.
Bravo team is down.
So Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon, as we were saying, yeah, they're a massive part of this film and this franchise. Paul Greengrass directed two of the trilogy starring Matt Damon. And Matt Damon's obviously been Jason Bourne and an integral part. It kind of was a career launcher for him. A restarter. He was a bit on the down low. Him and Ben Affleck were both kind of declining.
Bottoming out. Maybe it's more a career solidifier.
Well, possibly. I think it was a resurrector, almost like a phoenix thing. He hit Jason Bourne and then from that he kind of seemed to elevate. They both said that they wouldn't return to Bourne unless they were both involved. That was a key part. Matt Damon said, I'm not doing Jason Bourne unless Paul Greengrass is involved. And Paul Greengrass is massively involved. He is directing it as expected. And also he's the writer for the film, one of the writers for the film. And it is classic Jason Bourne. It has everything that you kind of expect from a Jason Bourne film. And it almost feels like, I mean, we started this thing with a little parody of it all. It's become very expected, all that sort of stuff. You've always got an asset. They always think asset. And they've always got like sort of CIA people who are sort of discovering who Jason Bourne is. He's like, you don't know who you're dealing with. This is Jason Bourne.
Often very old CIA directors who like really old, like in their 80s kind of thing.
Well, this really old CIA director really, is played by Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee, there we go, of course.
And you've got Alicia Vikander, kind of the it girl of the moment.
Yeah.
She is playing kind of a Pamela Landy type person. She's the young, sort of naive, up-and-coming CIA star.
Oh, sure.
Who thinks she can do something different with Jason Bourne. Yeah, I think, for me, the film was a disappointment overall. I'm a big fan of the previous trilogy, not the Jeremy Renner film. And I kind of was just a bit let down. It seemed
I'm sorry.
Very reminiscent to Finding Dory, actually. It seemed like everything was there for a great movie, but the soul of it is missing. The kind of core of it, the motivating, the kind of engine of the film isn't really there. And it feels like synthesized. And actually what you get is it kind of just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, I think.
Do you feel like neither of them, I mean, the two core parts of it, Matt Damon, Paul Greengrass, really wanted to come back, but they just couldn't turn down the offer?
No, I think they wanted to come back, but I think basically the reason why this film doesn't work is because the other films work really, really, really well.
Yeah.
They tied it off. That was the beauty of The Ultimatum, Bourne Ultimatum. And why I loved that film so much is they tied off things in such a satisfying way. You didn't feel like you needed more time with Jason
Bourne. And without being contrived as well.
Yeah, and at no point have I felt the need to go back to Jason Bourne. I felt satisfied. If you want to watch Jason Bourne, you've got those three films. They're great films. Watch them as a story. They're a complete story together.
Were they released quite close to each other? Is that part of it? Like they just kept the magic rolling?
Yeah, like I think the first one came out and then was a bit of a surprise hit. And then The Supremacy came out and then The Ultimatum kind of followed very quickly. And what was amazing about it was the fact that the Bourne Identity was a different director. That was Doug Liman. And it is slightly different. But then The Supremacy seemed to kind of tap into the feel of the first film and then access something more about his character, something which you wanted to find out,
yeah,
which was then resolved in Ultimatum. This film, as with, I think I've said it to you before, it really is pulling old wounds. It's pulling its scars to make something happen, to make something new happen. And the film just doesn't really have a motivation. Matt Damon's character doesn't feel like, you don't really know why he cares. And it's like a very cheap way that they try and pull it out. The story just isn't really there for you to really be invested.
Were the performances good at least?
Tommy Lee Jones is nice and old.
Like, I love Tommy Lee Jones, man. I've said before on this podcast how much I love Tommy Lee Jones. Was he on good form?
I mean, he's a good actor. I'm a big fan of him, but there's just nothing really there. He's just old and a bit grumpy.
Right.
There's this kind of weird sort of link between the CIA in the story and a kind of Mark Zuckerberg type.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I just didn't really buy
into. Is
this
getting a bit annoying now, the sort of social... That was Inspector, wasn't it? The whole sort of internet, everyone's being controlled kind of thing. Is that what it is?
Yeah, there's this kind of Mark Zuckerberg type who's launching this deep dream sort of super app, right. Which links everyone's data. And of course,
that's
the CIA want to get their fingers...
Genesis, I think.
Yeah, like the Skynet. What I found was really difficult about the film was the fact that they have these past characters which seem to work really well and were used kind of consistently throughout their films.
Yeah.
And this film seems to kind of ditch all that and only keep Matt Damon and kind of the locations and the sort of the ideas there. But none of the characters remain, really.
I thought you said an old friend in your little plot summary.
They do have an old friend, but they're not in it for very long.
Right.
And that is a problem in the movie, I think, personally.
I have to admit, in my sort of expectations for this from the trailers and what I remember of the old films is... It looks different to me. So the trailers are full of Matt Damon on motorbikes doing James Bond stuff, whereas the Bourne films were characterised by sort of efficiency, but hidden. He very rarely did things in public.
Unflashy stuff.
Yeah, unless he couldn't avoid it, like the car chase in The Supremacy, I think it is. Whereas this film, it looked like he was always going for the show-stopping moments.
Yeah, I think you might have hit the money there. It doesn't feel like James Bond, but I do think they've gone for a flashier version of the things. It's interesting, they have like a car chase in Vegas with somebody driving a SWAT car, which just literally plows through cars and cars and cars and cars.
Right.
And you think that isn't Jason Bourne. Like when car crashes happen, it's a big deal and people get injured.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the car crashes don't really mean anything. It's more spectacle and the world isn't quite right. I think you agree
with me. Well, two final things I'd want to see, and I wonder whether this taps into what you're saying. First off, is just bits. And I think you'll know what I mean when I say this. But with those films, you come away remembering that bit. Do you know what I mean? Like whether it's the fight with the guy in the kitchen from the first film or even the sniper thing with Clive Owen, do you remember that? Or the Carl Urban car chase in, is it Prague or something? I can't remember. In The Supremacy. Lots of bits. You kind of think, whoa, that was really cool, really well done. Did that happen or not so much? Were there any memorable bits?
Not for me. I mean, there's an impressive sequence in Athens, which we play the clip of, which is visually quite impressive and the scale of it is. But it didn't...
I'm really after something more intangible than that, man. Less tangible, rather. Not more intangible, that makes no sense. But in your head, is it a bit?
No, there isn't really a bit. And actually, you know how all the Bourne films end with a... If I do like a particular sound effect, maybe you could play it even.
We'll find out. Tell me what the sound effect is.
It's the bit... it's that Moby song, you know, the ending.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we did it better.
No, please play the clip. That bit I was waiting for because everything else had hit. And I thought, well, okay, at least I've got that kind of final sting, that last little classic Jason Bourne moment, which has that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's the worst one.
Is
it's
it really?
The worst one. It's such a disappointing one. And it's just like, oh, the movie ended.
That's really disappointing, ooh, man.
It just kind of deflates.
Then the second thing I'd want to know is, I also remember serious morality questions being raised constantly, because Jason Bourne himself is a moral sort of paradox, isn't it? Because the more he remembers, the more he remembers that actually he was a ruthless killer. And throughout the film, he's presented with making choices that matter. Did that turn up again?
I mean, that I don't want to spoil the story for anyone. I've been... The way that the Bourne Ultimatum leaves it is the fact that Jason Bourne is remembered. He knows who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not searching for who he is anymore. And so the moral questions kind of go with that. And I don't think there is really moral questions. I don't believe that there's
enough
motivation.
Maybe that's your soul. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the soul. That is the problem with the movie, I think.
Interesting. Okay, well, so grade?
It's the worst one other than the Bourne Legacy. I'm going to give it a B minus.
And is it a to watch? You think people should give it a go? Because it's the top of the US box office at the moment.
I would say if you want to watch a Jason Bourne film, go for it. I don't think you'll leave the film feeling happy.
Really? Genuinely? Not even happy? Come on, man.
Well, maybe that's a bit extreme. I saw it with a friend.
You've
and he
obviously
said,
got very high expectations.
I saw it with a friend over the weekend and he said it's trying too hard.
Okay.
And it just was. And he actually, to quote the very first thing he said, he came out of the cinema and he was like, well, that was a bit rubbish.
Did
like,
he really?
Yeah, that's what he said. That's yeah. And I think that's kind of my feeling. That was a bit rubbish. I think you have high expectations and this film doesn't meet it.
Well, there we go. I mean, it's still on my list to watch if I can squeeze in the time. So we shall see.
You'll be giving me lots of plus ones, I guarantee it.
Uh-huh. I can only give you a maximum one, and I wouldn't anyway, out of principle. Okay, any clonus? Any bonus closing things?
Or maybe I could just say something cool, and then I could get the Moby thing.
Maybe.
I am Phil Bailey, no more.
Right, Phil, loads of emails and tweets to get through. We'll do some of them here and more next week because...
I am going away, I'm afraid.
Look at this, and it came out of the blue. So we did our little double whammy last week. This week, Phil's doing it, but at least it's not going to be quite the same as last time. So we got, you know, it'll feel like two normal episodes, but slightly shorter.
That's what I'm hoping. And then, yeah, I was expecting you, I don't know, to get Jude in or something like that to replace me.
I could do that. Would you like to do that, Judith? I'm just letting the audience know that you're listening.
No.
Right, there's your answer. Well, let's kick off, shall we? Here we go. First up, I got a tweet here from Nicholas. He says, plus one for the new What We've Been Watching format. That is adding on What We've Been Watching as an extra episode in the week. Glad you enjoyed it, Nicholas. Thanks for letting us know. That's not going to happen this week or next week, I suppose, is it?
Is it not?
Well, probably not, just to save us a bit of time. When I say us, I mean me. He says he also watched City of God directly after your review, which is, what, 3 weeks ago now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he loved it. Plus one to you, Phil.
Yes! Thank you, Nicholas. That?
He also flags up a Netflix recommendation, The Transporter Refueled. He says the movie's so bad, it's hilarious.
Is it an animation? Is it any?
Do you know what Transporter is, don't you?
Oh, Transporter. I thought you said Transformers Refueled.
No. Transporter Refueled. It was Jason Statham to begin with, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought that franchise was kind of a bit tacky anyway.
Well, it's on Netflix, so who knows whether that is evidence of the tack or not. We'll give it a watch. Thanks for flagging it up, Nicholas.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Netflix correspondent.
And we've got an email here from Aaron. He says, totally forgot about the extra treat that was released over the weekend. So used to the weekly Wednesday installment of the regular main. Now I've got to set myself a reminder to not forget about the dessert. Nice meal metaphor. Thanks, Aaron.
The cheese board I'd like to go with.
The cheese board? What? Which part of the cheese board is this?
The cheese board is the what we've been watching. Just move on.
Okay. He says, loved your Disney 5 top 5. 5 top 5? Disney top 5. He says his top 5 of hand-drawn Disney. Number 1, Beauty and the Beast. Lilo and Stitch. Aladdin. Tarzan. Tarzan number 2, really?
I cannot get on board with that. I'm sorry. Nope.
And then
Tarzan,
he says,
no.
Hercules or Emperor's New Groove. I'm not sure that is numbered, actually, so there's just his top 5. But we agree with most of those, don't we?
Tarzan.
I don't think Emperor's New Groove
is
to be
I'm going to bring on the hate. I think that's a bad film.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, Phil Collins, not good.
He specifically seems to have flagged Phil Collins as the reason it is good.
Disagree.
Music fight.
Disagree.
Music fight. Stay away.
Can you imagine Phil Collins beating me up, though? Never happening.
I can, actually, yeah. I'll just put it out there. He also says he thinks it might be quite fun to hear our least favourite 5.
Well, first of all, you've heard one, Tarzan. But
well,
yes,
you think
I would like
a bit negative, though.
No,
isn't it?
I would like to do it, though. I think what you could do is say top 3 bad ones, so we're not laying on too thick.
Well, depending on how our ideas go as we record this double episode, you might hear that on this week's episode, Aaron. So listen out for that. Lots of love from your most faithful fan, the wise man from the East, Confucius. Sorry, I called you Aaron the entire way through. That's Confucius. Thanks, Confucius, getting in touch.
Cheers, mate.
A couple of quick ones in succession here from Dr. Nick Phil.
Dr. Nick, hey,
Dr.
everybody.
Nick, hi, everybody. Yeah, and Dr. Nick says, early roles. Remember we did that a little while ago?
Yeah, Mikus and all that stuff.
Yeah. So we got one here from Dr. Nick. Judith, could you not yawn while I'm reading the emails out, please? Terrible. Dr. Nick, don't believe that's anything to do with you. Here we go. She says, Chris Hemsworth as Kirk's dad in Star Wars.
Yeah, not Star Wars, Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Dr. Nick, you got that one wrong.
The 2009 J.J. Abrams one.
Yeah, you, in fact, you mentioned that. I'm surprised you didn't do that yourself.
I don't know. It just didn't seem relevant at the time.
Okay, Kirsten Dunst in Little Women and What's Eating Gilbert Grape, which I haven't seen, actually.
Yes, Kirsten Dunst. What's Eating Gilbert Grape is Leonardo DiCaprio, isn't it?
Yes, I'm going to say yes to that. Yeah, correct. Harrison Ford in American Graffiti.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He's cool in that. He's a bit like an annoying sort of bully boy wearing a cowboy hat. Great film, that one.
We should get a water balloon thrown on him.
I can't quite remember why. It's something humiliating happens. We should watch that again. Maybe a cheese or wine. It's great.
Yeah, I think that might be a good one, actually.
We've given away that we love it already. We always do that with cheese or wine.
No, but I think this is an important thing to say about cheese or wine. Cheese or wine is not whether or not we love the film. It's whether or not it stands up to modern viewing. Is it a good modern film or is it a good classic film?
Okay, fair enough. That gets us out of jail, man. Nicely done. And she finishes off on a different note. I wonder whether it's worth profiling Gary Marshall, who died quite recently. He directed Pretty Woman and Runaway Bride, Phil. But Happy Days is what his obituary led with. Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I did see this on the news. Yeah, very talented film guy. Made a lot of very successful rom-coms.
Well, and those two movies, Pretty Woman and Runaway Bride, are pretty spectacular films. Pretty Woman is more dated, I think, than Runaway Bride.
But I think that's probably more fondly remembered. I don't think many people talk about Runaway Bride.
Good film, man. I kind of mostly remember it for that last bit where they sing, can't hurry love, no, you just have to wait. That bit. I like
you
it.
Love wooing, don't you?
For some, it creeps out. It's like punctuation or something. Thanks very much, Dr. Nick. And a final one here just to finish on. David got in touch on Twitter and he says, at Super Belly Bros, for a picture perfect, he wants us to do the rooster from Robin Hood doing his song. Well, but is it that one? Or is it the every town has its ups and downs?
I'd mean, yeah.
Sometimes ups.
Yeah, I mean,
outnumber the downs.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Phil.
There's your picture perfect, David. If Laurie's going to be like that, I won't do it.
We'll have a think about that, David. I've not considered it from a sort of song point of view. And I don't know. That's worth thinking about. We'll see. Other listeners out there, if you've got a picture perfect you want us to take a look at, I think we've said before, if you want to send in your own, then please do. But give us as much description about why you think it's awesome as you can. But if there's something you think we just got to see and you reckon it could provoke us to go over the top, then let us know.
Is that all you got, man?
Yeah, I think so for this week. We've got to save some for the fake next episode again. Thanks, Phil.
But thank you very much to all the correspondents. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we doing any movie news or anything like that?
Let's see. Play a jingle. So, Phil, I'm going to be using the movie news sort of set dressing for this segment, but it's not really news.
What is it then?
It's movie comment.
That sounds rubbish.
I'm going to say that again so I can put the echo effect on. Movie comment. Now I have to talk in a newsreader voice, even though it doesn't make sense, but here we go. There are a shocking amount of animated movies being released at the moment, all on a very similar theme. It looks to me as though the studios are competing brutally against one another.
Okay, now you actually talk about it without having to use the voice.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was quite hard to follow, wasn't it? I was just watching some of the trailers that are out at the moment and looking at some upcoming releases, and I think it's astonishing, actually, how much the animation studios seem to be battling for exactly the same space. And it recalls to me, have you heard about the sort of feud that Pixar and DreamWorks had over Ants and A Bug's Life?
Yeah, they both seemed to went for the same territory, didn't they?
Well, they knew about it. That was the thing. There was a sort of, at the time, animated movies were still emerging and they were a massive big budget proposition, innovative technology and everything. So there was a bit of a community feel amongst the animators and executives involved. So it was one of the first sort of open betrayals or so they thought.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
If you read about it, it is very interesting. You know, Steve Jobs is involved.
The Secret Life of Ants.
Yeah, it's really worth looking at. And I think it's Katzenberg, who's the head of DreamWorks or something. And there was serious feuding going on and competing release schedules, completely competing ideas. And it's weird because the end result films are completely different.
Very different films. I'm more of an Ants guy.
Oh, me too, man. I think it's brilliant. The soundtrack's great too. It's Harry Gregson-Williams instead. Mm. Same guys who did Shrek with John Powell too. Okay, factoid aside. Looking at this slate that's coming up, you've got Sing. Have you heard of Sing?
Yeah, it's this sort of animal. I saw a trailer for it today. is sort of this same Despicable Me guys doing kind of like an X Factor,
yeah,
Zootopia type thing.
It's animals, but doing the X Factor singing contest. And it's Garth Jennings, I think, is the director, the guy from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Rambo. And it looks like an upbeat, fairly nice thing. But I saw a trailer today when I was watching, I think, the BFG, which is coming next week, listeners. I saw an advert for Ballerina, which is an animation. I was sort of thinking, I've not heard of this at all. And it looked exactly, the facial animations for the characters in it look exactly like Big Hero 6.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I thought, is this Disney? Is this Disney? And I was looking at the plot summary, and it's about a little girl who dreams of being a ballerina and has to go to a class and has to do her best to make it. And I'm thinking, that's quite similar to Sing, isn't it? It's sort of a, can you succeed in a musical theatre kind of a way? And then I did a bit more digging, and it's by the Weinstein Company.
Oh, Miramax.
But I don't think it is Miramax anymore. I think it's now the Weinstein Company.
Is it?
Oh, I think, okay. Miramax is separate, yeah. And they've acquired it, I think, from Cannes. It was screened at Cannes or something like that, or the idea was, or they picked up the idea at Cannes. I don't know how it worked. But it's just interesting that both of those things are being trailed at the same time. I would say they occupy quite a similar space. What do you reckon?
I do think it's interesting. I mean, it's common, like, sort of, thing. I thought maybe we'd do a feature on it at some point. The kind of the bizarre situations we get where the two films about the same subject, sort of First Contact, and there was another one which was very similar to that as well.
Or at least very similar films being advertised at the same time. And, you know, in today's cash-strapped world, it's entirely possible they'll only get one person's ticket. Do you know what I mean? Or yeah, the ticket, yeah, they'll only buy one ticket rather than both. And then even together with that, there's there's an Australian animation about a koala coming out.
I did see a trailer for that.
Did you?
And didn't look good.
But isn't that weird? Because the main character in Sing is an animated koala as well. There's a koala overload. I was just thinking that earlier on today. I saw a Cashel advert with an animated koala. I thought, enough of the koalas.
You said koala too many times.
Well, exactly. I've seen it too many times as well. But it just makes me think, I thought the days of that were sort of over for studios.
Well, like, they knew kind of what other people were doing, so they wouldn't want to tread on each other's toes.
Yeah, generally accepted wisdom is to not release your movies at the same time or trail them at the same time, so there's a bit of a chance people to come and see it, unless they're deliberately trying to put other people's films in the dust.
Interesting. I think it's kind of weird that there's like all these films doing kind of anthropomorphized animals, like, in the real world. That's odd to me. Like, they did Zootropolis, or Zootropia, and now they've got Sing, which is kind of like the same idea.
And it has to be said, it's slightly arbitrary in places as well. You know, what's really being added? Zootropolis seemed to have a reason for it. But yeah, maybe it's, you know, everything's data-driven now, Phil. Maybe the data says, go animals. Go animal or go home. Something like that. And it's interesting to me as well that even the BFG was released now. Because watching the film, and again, this is a slight teaser for the review next week, I just found myself thinking, why on earth is this not being released at Christmas? And I can only think of one reason. Can you think what that is?
Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah, I think everyone is dodging Star Wars like a massive bullet.
That is kind of, it's quite interesting tracing that as, this is going into a very long comment, but it's interesting tracing schedules, movie schedules, because it kind of shows you what studios think of certain movies. And they just don't want to go near certain big projects.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. And the way that they're sort of trying to manipulate or get a hold on their audience. But yeah, there you go. It's just a little comment, a little thought I had. I'm curious to know what listeners think. What do you like the look of more? Are you going to go see Sing? Are you going to see Ballerina? Or are you going to see this weird Australian koala film?
Probably none.
Don't say that. We have to see them all, man. Come on. That's
yeah, I will see all.
Movie comments. All right, what's the thing I do? Shuffle papers?
Shuffle papers, and then you make a little, like, general chatter.
General chit-chat. Chit-chat, chit-chat, chit-chat. Bye for now.
Stay happy.
So another thing that happened to me on these 10 days that I've been away, you know, for reasons best left to the imagination, is that I joined a drama workshop briefly. You know, allegedly to help run it, but I ended up participating in it. And let me tell you, man, acting's quite difficult, isn't it?
It's really tricky, hard. Man.
I had to walk around and pretend I was in London, and I had to be a character. I had to choose, you know, a famous person and act as if I were them in London.
Who did you pick?
I actually picked Harrison Ford, but that never came out, and I never admitted to it. And I sort of halfway through the exercise, I kind of sat down. Because when you suddenly realise I'm going to have to pretend to be Harrison Ford, it all becomes quite embarrassing. So,
did you start yelling, my family?
What did I? I didn't do that. That would have given the game away. I think I went, nope, no thank you, no autographs. That's the extent of my skill.
Just grumpy then, is that
impressive?
You did. Yeah, very. It's like Harrison's sitting across from me.
Well, there you go. And I tried to do his little half smile sneer thing that he does, like that, you know. Shuffle around a little bit like in The Fugitive. But, you know, if anyone was watching, I'm sure they would have said a terrible performance. So, why don't we talk about what makes a good performance, Phil?
Now, this is a very subjective question, I think. And, of course, You could argue it till you're blue in the face. It is very difficult to pinpoint actually what is good acting, what makes it good acting. What is acting, Laurie?
But the thing is, everyone thinks they know, because when you come out of a film, they're like, I think he was good, or I think he really deserves the Oscar, that kind of thing. So everyone has an opinion, whether we want to call ourselves experts or not, we do. So, well, you know what, man? I mean, this isn't an example of someone I think is brilliant at this point, but while I was watching Star Trek, which we're going to review in next week's episode, I was focusing on Simon Pegg's performance as Scotty, and I was thinking, you know, this is kind of working and not working for me at the same time. And I was watching the things he's doing, and it suddenly occurred to me, well, not only is it that acting on screen is very different from acting in the theatre, let's say, but what he was doing, he was not trying to be a person. He was not trying to convince me that he was a person. He was trying to fill a role. And I think where I've often fallen down is the assumption that what makes good acting is to come across as real as you possibly can in the moment. But actually, that's not what you're doing. When you're doing a film, you're telling a story, and the story is 2 hours, but sometimes it has to feel like a week. Sometimes it has to feel like it's a whole year. So necessarily, the performances that people give are not real life performances. Does that make sense, what I said? And what you're doing instead is you're imbuing life into a story, into a script. So someone needs to overshare. They need to say more of what's on their mind or about how they're feeling than they would in real life. They need to act in a more exaggerated way than they would in real life. And yet, in the process of doing that, convince you that they're like a real person. So I feel like I made that very confusing.
No, I know what you mean. So Daniel Day-Lewis is probably a performance for me that in There Will Be Blood, I think he's an incredible actor and is very highly regarded. I think something which he does in that film is he really, somehow he manages to be the character and tell the story. But at the same time, I feel like his performance is giving you extra information, which only as the audience member you're really clued into.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Which I think is kind of what you're saying. They somehow need to convey something which is larger than life, something which in reality wouldn't work, but for the sake of the story is beneficial.
And yet somehow convince you you're watching something real happening. I mean, it's like the classic on the phone. I mean, movies is famous, isn't it? People pick up the phone and they give away, they say way more than you ever would in a phone conversation and at a different pace, don't they? They'd say, what? You're kidding me? The bomb is on its way to the president. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you wouldn't, if you were getting that phone call, it's like, yeah, got it. And then phone down straight away, you'd run and you stop that from happening. But they tell you everything on the phone. And it's completely unrealistic, but they have to imbue it with a kind of believable emotion.
Yeah, I completely agree. You mentioned Scotty, Simon Pegg as Scotty in the new Star Trek as kind of hit and miss. Is there anything which you think is positively bad?
Yeah, well, in particular with his performance there, it's the lightheartedness or the attempt to provide lighthearted comic lines doesn't entirely work because you get the impression that it is an impression. So somehow the difference between knitting together something funny with something serious, the two don't really meet properly. So I don't feel like I'm seeing a character. I feel like I'm seeing a bunch of lines.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I read an article about this kind of question, which was part of the reason why I wanted to kind of chat about it, because I thought, oh, it's a really good question. What makes good acting? And something which they mentioned was that point about ownership. You have to have actors who own their lines, who believe like this is something they want to say. This is something which they're not being asked to say, but it's theirs. They're the one producing these lines.
Yeah, and maybe it all boils down to communication. This is something I've thought about before as well. You know, editing, for example, in movies, I've often thought that editing is a different skill than people think it is. If you're an editor, you need to know how to communicate things because you need to be able to see all the material you've got, and you need to know when you can cut and make your point clear, and you need to know which cuts can make it clearer. And I think exactly the same thing applies to acting. I'm thinking of Tom Hardy in The Revenant, who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I thought it was terrific. I thought he should have absolutely won, and he didn't. He lost out to Mark Rylance. And one of the reasons I was so compelled by his performance was the fear that I got from his character that seemed real. He had a haunted look in his eyes. His mode of speech was almost unintelligible. But not because it's Tom Hardy. I think he did that deliberately because the guy was kind of a withdrawn guy. And everything he did over communicated to me that this is a man who is paranoid and withdrawn. So does that make sense? So it's less that he really convincingly played a real life person. It was more that he made me feel nervous watching this bloke because everything he did was terrified. And yet not hammy. So it's that middle ground between being a ham and a hack and being so restrained that you can't really access the performance.
Do you think then that good acting is about sort of, often you hear about method actors on Robert De Niro or whatever, they'll live the life of their character. He like taxi driver, he drove around as a taxi driver or whatever, learned to box, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They do it. Shia LaBeouf for his tank movie Fury, he like didn't wash for days and days.
Oh, yeah, you told me about this.
So that he would know what it's like to be smelly and gross and have people not really want to hang around with him, all that sort of stuff. I think he even pulled out a tooth for some reason.
Crazy.
But do you think it's more about just complexity then, like sort of as an actor working out what your character is feeling and why, and then working out a way to communicate that kind of an idea almost, rather than like a full on backstory, but an idea like you saying about Tom Hardy.
I think that it's a good point you make, because actually the method behind the actor can be anything as long as the result is there. And I think it's about communication. So do whatever you need to do to make the audience feel the way that they need to feel and make them react to this person the way that they need to react. And I've no doubt that being on screen, it makes it much easier, because you can have a director and an editor who both combine to get the most out of an actor. I think that's probably how they end up choosing an actor, because they know what they have to work with. Do you know what I mean? They know, oh, well, I know that I can chop this guy this way and that way, or I can direct this guy that way and he'll produce this. And that is perhaps why you have so many duos who last the test of time. Johnny Depp and Tim Burton and, well, I guess Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon to a certain extent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I find it an interesting question, because with film acting, so often the director's saying, right, give me a take with a bit more sarcasm, or give me this and this and this. And like, you wonder how much of their performance is actually down to the actor.
And how much to the editor and
director.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, especially because if they do that and they get multiple takes, then they can recut it completely to give the character an entire different slant, right?
And then their performance, their brilliant acting performance, is actually constructed in the editing room. Kind of like you were saying, like,
yeah,
it, and then how much credit do you give to the actor as being a good actor, and how much of it is the director, the editor, the screenwriter, whatever, understanding their movie and understanding what emotion they want their actor to portray?
Well, there we go. We've opened up a can of worms right here. I mean, and listen, it's just to reconfirm, we're not here to tell you what good acting is. We're just sort of throwing up thoughts about it and what's occurred to us as we watch them. I've heard some people say that stillness is very important.
What does that mean?
In the face. So, again, I think of myself in year 9 drama class or whatever it is, walking up to the door and having to pretend that I'm knocking on the door, and my face is constantly either too serious or too animated and everything else, whereas actually in reality people's faces are quite still. And maybe that's one of the ways you do want to be fairly true to life, and you need to sort of look at the way that people are, the way they hold themselves physically. Perhaps it's more restrained, whereas emotionally it's exaggerated.
It's interesting though, because The Godfather, there's a scene in The Godfather with Al Pacino, which was highlighted to me by somebody on YouTube, which I thought was really, really interesting. He talks about a scene where his character is deciding whether or not to kill somebody as part of the mob or whatever. And it shows his face in the camera angle, and his face is completely still, but his eyes are doing loop-de-loops and all over the place, to the point where in reality that's ridiculous. If you saw somebody's eyes going like Thomas the Tank Engine, like all over the place, you think, whoa, what's wrong with this guy? Something's up with him. Are you all right, Michael? Like, everything going okay? And he's like, no, but in the film, it works brilliantly because it communicates the turmoil that his mind is going through in that moment. His face completely still, his eyes are everywhere, and he's deciding whether or not to act upon this instruction or not. And so I think what we're honing down onto is the communication, the relating something to the audience.
That's what it is.
That's what it is, which is beyond sort of anything to do with the script necessarily and the story. But it's about communicating more than just the lines or the character. It's saying something through their performance to the audience directly.
Yeah. And I think to that reason, I think that slightly puts the lie to the idea that you inhabit somebody, because you don't. You know, you inhabit them in caricature form so that you can get that message across in a very short space of time with a very limited range of dialogue.
I mean, just a thought that popped into my head. Some of the best acting I think I've seen ever was Tom Hanks in Captain Phillips. Have you seen that film?
I haven't, actually. I feel like every film you mentioned so far, I haven't seen.
Well, this is why I asked the question.
Picking holes in my big film net.
Sorry, man. It happens to me as well. But there's a scene where he kind of confronts all the things that happened to him in that film. This is the guy who was boarded by Somali pirates and everything like that. And the shock that Tom Hanks manages to convey, and the sort of shell-shockness of it all, as he's being sort of examined by a medical person, it's just completely relatable, and yet it's sort of alien at the same time?
Well, you know, I think this is the mystery of it. I mean, I'm getting to the point where I want to say, listeners, we want to know from you, what do you look out for? What makes you really think, oh, they nailed it? Or, man, that was terrible. Did you see him chewing the scenery and all that sort of stuff? Have you got any absolute dynamite performances you want us to check out, or real low light? I mean, have you got a performance that you would count as just awful?
I really, 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 really didn't like what's-her-face, Denise Targaryen lady in Me Before Ye.
Oh, Emilia Clarke.
It felt like she wasn't a real person.
No, I agree with you. Even from the short clip that you played me, I thought I completely agreed. It seemed like she didn't believe the script herself. And that came out because the lines didn't sound like they would ever be said by anybody, even in an exaggerated fashion.
So there you go. That's my bad example. Send us your good examples, bad examples, and also your sort of, if you could summarise in a sentence or two, what is a good actor? What are the things we need to take notice of? What makes us say that was incredible, he deserves props or she deserves props?
Yeah, and I'd be interested to know, you know, how does it differ? I mean, what's a great comedic performance versus a great dramatic performance? Let's chat about that stuff, eh? Too much. That's throwing it too wide, isn't it?
It's very wide already, man. I don't know if you could tell.
I feel like I wanted to say so much more there. I mean, didn't even get to talk about Kate Blanchett, and I think she's awesome.
Maybe we'll save that for the email responses. We'll talk about Kate then.
There you go, listeners. What an enthralling, amazing segment that was.
That was the Bailey Bros going deep. Episode 36 is coming to a close.
It is 36, isn't it? Yes, you're right, Phil. Sorry,
it is 36.
I can't get my head straight on with all that stuff.
See, yeah. You mocked me at the beginning when I was a bit confused by all the numbers, but then here you are.
It is easy to do. Listeners, hope you enjoyed that. Hope you were interested by our reviews of those two big movies, and we want to know your thoughts as well, especially if you disagree. I mean, if you agree with me, definitely get in touch, because I could use a plus one generally. I'm low on the pluses, so yeah, get in touch. Superbabybros@gmail.com, @superbabybros on Twitter, and, you know, it's a slightly shorter, different episode this week. It'll be similar next week, but don't you worry, it's going to feel just as brilliant.
Short, sweet, and snappy.
And that
like
is
a sugar snap.
The BFG. Sugar snap. The BFG, and also Star Trek Beyond.
Star Trek Beyond, written by Simon Pegg and directed by Justin Lin, the Fast and Furious guy, starring all the usual characters.
Did it work? Is it impossible to follow J.J. Abrams? We will discover.
Watch this space.
Okay. I prefer the
We'll have that argument next week, I guarantee.
Great,
it.
It will show up. That's something to look forward to, listeners. Okay, bye for now. Have a great week.
Ta-ta for now.
Cheers. Bye.
So, man, I don't know if you noticed anything different about me.
Well, what do you want me to say to that? I mean, yes is the answer.
What have you noticed that's different about me?
great quiz. Do you like to get involved in this? Just say anything loudly.
His hair.
Thanks, Judith. Yeah, your hair, Phil, it's different.
Yes, I buzzed my head. I made the decision. And I don't know if you've, because we're genetically related, I don't know if you've ever thought the same thing. I was a bit terrified that I was going to go bald and my head's going to look weird.
Share this fear, Phil. You don't know what lies beneath. It's very hard to tell.
What lies beneath Star Wars and Ford.
Yeah, exactly.
That movie about going bald.
But, you know, people have been doing it well for years, especially movie stars. Jude Law is losing it big time.
Yeah, but he's got like a massively handsome face, hasn't he? Well,
yeah, I guess that's the case.
Oh,
yeah,
thanks, Judith. Thanks, cheerleader Judith.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to do. You know, you've got to buzz it at some point so that should that time come, you wake up and the hair's left on the pillow, then you're good to go, man. No fear.
No fear. Well, that's kind of me now. I feel like I've conquered my demon.
Do you feel like you move faster?
I feel like my ears are really cold.
Really?
Yeah, it's very breezy. And I constantly keep on rubbing it like a hedgehog.
That's the best thing when I did it. Yeah, I love that. Rubbing the back of your head, it's like having a brush attached. You can probably do that, actually. You could just, in my case, my wife, I'd go brush her hair, just rub my head all across it. There you go, darling. You're ready for work. Too weird or funny?
It's very weird. The thing I was going to say is a bit like, you know, you get those suede couch cushions.
Yes.
And if you rub them one way, they turn one colour.
You can
rub them back the other way.
Yeah, I love that.
Man, I sat in some friend's house.
Grandparents' house as well, big time.
Yeah. And I was just rubbing it like crazy, just enjoying the feeling. And I think I'm doing that to my hair now, which I think maybe is going to contribute to me going bald.
No, you're not going to go bald from the back up, man. That doesn't happen.
Well, you should see my back hairline.
Well, ditto. Well, there we go. Nice bit of personal information for the listeners.
I'll hit you
Who's
with it.
Who's doing the hitting? Hit me.
So we've, it's an ex...
Good start. Great.
I think you should.
That's going in the outtakes. There were no outtakes the last 2 weeks.
I think you should give us the plot. I think you're better with the plot.
I can't use that bit of audio. What are you doing? You need to do the whole thing again. What about funny? Did you find... What about funny? What a stupid question.
There's something about the fear of... Oh, this is rubbish. I changed my mind.